This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Shuad Kutin, with me Joyce Goh and Tan Chung Han. Now, last Friday, over 200 Chinese companies were added to the MSCI indices. Those indices guide over $12 trillion US dollars worth of assets. On the line, we have Kingsley Jones, founder and chief investment officer at Jevons Global in Sydney. Thank you so much, Kingsley, for joining us this morning. I want to begin with that fact that these new 200 companies from China, are these companies going to be enticing global investors?
Well, yeah, we think so. I mean, for now, this is clearly just a catch-up move to the very low weight that China's had in global market indices. And MSCI is going to stage the process by which they make that inclusion through a series of steps. As you mentioned, when measured by market valuation, China's already the second largest stock market in the world, but it's got only a tiny weight at present in the main indices. There are definitely opportunities in Chinese equities, but many global investors have tended to stick to standout disruption plays like Alibaba, Tencent, or Baidu. Clearly, they've been growing so fast, and they have business models that are very similar to those in markets like the US. And more importantly, you can purchase those stocks on US exchanges. So that's been the focus until now, but going forward, we do expect, as a result of this opening up of Chinese markets, we do expect to see more interest in listed infrastructure plays in China, which look cheap to us. They have some way to go on governance and management, but we do think they look cheap. And certainly the Chinese energy companies and perhaps Chinese consumer companies like autos and consumer lending in finance going forward.
Now, if with these Chinese stocks being added to the MSCI, do you think we risk further outflows from regional equity markets?
Look, there may be some minor flow effects from funds that are confined to invest only in emerging markets because then they're moving from one bucket to the next. However, the bigger flow effects in emerging markets really come from money pouring in and pouring out from more generalist funds that can buy emerging markets. So they tend to do so when times are good, but they're not there when times are not so good. So I don't think it's going to be a huge effect. There will be some effect, but it's probably at the margin going to attract money from, say, the generalist global funds that previously were not invested. I don't think that's going to be to the detriment of emerging markets generally.
Now, Kingsley, also last Friday, we had U.S. non-farm payrolls. Now, you know, how do you think that sets us up for this month's Fed meeting, well, actually taking place next week?
Well, you know, there were good numbers on Friday for non-farm payrolls. U.S. employment, unemployment is now at levels that haven't been seen since the late 60s. I actually think there's further to go on the U.S. employment story in the sense that there's been a lot of underemployed or underutilized people in that economy, and we probably should see a general improvement not only in the unemployment rate, but also participation and utilization of that labor force. So I don't think that the wage inflation is going to get out of hand too soon, and therefore, whilst there is upward pressure on interest rates, it's probably not going to be too bad. Indeed, as an investor, we took some comfort from the good results in construction. That was pretty positive. A factor to look out for that later this year is really rising capital expenditure intentions in the United States, and some of that's going to be construction activity. But we see that as in logistics, for instance, you know, with the growth of online shopping, there's a lot of investment happening in expanding logistics centers and road and rail networks to some extent, but also in the energy sector specifically. You know, the U.S. now has in the position undreamed of some years ago that they may actually be able to export oil and gas. And that means that they'll probably be putting in new facilities to make that possible.
Hey, Kingsley, the Fed meeting comes after geopolitical scares out of Europe and also trade tensions between the U.S. and its allies. You know, so in your view, which will have greater weight on the Fed's monetary policy outlook? Is it global factors or domestic factors?
I think the first point to make is that the Federal Reserve's remit is strictly domestic. I mean, it's really constrained within their charter that they're focused on the domestic economy. However, they will pay attention to global factors, and the last time they really did that was during the financial crisis, where they made some special arrangements to provide dollar liquidity into global markets to prevent a further acceleration of the meltdown then. But we have to understand that their actions then were really targeted at the health of the banking system, and so there was a clear connection between domestic and global conditions. It's possible now that the Italian situation may lead to some tightness in money markets, and therefore they will be mindful of that. But really dealing with that's a concern of the ECB. You know, that's their focus and not the Fed. To the extent that the euro is used in trade and as a reserve currency, you know, it's important, and we've seen the euro weaken substantially versus the US dollar, but that's probably part of the cure for the Italian situation. And we don't think the euro is anywhere near as important for the funding position in emerging markets. You know, in the headlines, we've been hearing about Argentina and Turkey, and in part that's because those markets typically borrow in US dollars. They don't have large external funding through euro, so it's not as big a problem there in terms of instability. So we think that, you know, when you put all that together, a firming US economy, we have little doubt that they're going to raise rates, the Fed at the next meeting, and they'll probably do the four hikes this year instead of the what was previously expected three.
Yeah, Kingsley, it looks like your views are very much in line with what markets are pricing in. Fed fund futures right now, 100% rate hike for next week. But in getting to that four rate hikes for this year, can investors still rely on that good old data-dependent Fed? Or, as you perhaps hinted at just now, there could be some other, you know, softer factors that they should look out for?
I think the trajectory of the U.S. economy is firm enough that the Fed will just go right ahead and raise rates. I don't think there's any particular reason to delay, particularly with construction activity picking up. And I think that's the kind of data that they're going to pay attention to. The situation in particular emerging markets like Argentina and Turkey, it's, you know, it's of some concern, but I don't think it's systemic. Italy could become systemic. But as I said before, I mean, that's the ECB's call as to what they do there. And they have plenty of tools at their disposal to deal with that situation.
Kingsley, before the Fed's decision, we're expecting the RBA's interest rate decision tomorrow. So can we safely rule out a rate hike by Australia's central bank in 2018?
I think so. I mean, an RBA hike, we don't think it's going to happen tomorrow, certainly. And we don't expect any hikes this year. Look, the two factors to consider here are the underlying budget balance federally in Australia is improving significantly, and a lot of that is due to the reflation of the commodities economy. You know, we've seen firm prices in iron ore and other exports, and that has really turned around Australia's trade balance. And it's also helping the budget through taxes. Now, the flip side to that is that the housing market, as I think most people know, is certainly in the two major centres, Sydney and Melbourne, is pretty weak. It's been declining. But we've got firm housing prices elsewhere in some of the regional markets like Hobart. So I think that the RBA is not going to want to do very much with a weak housing market in the major population centres. And they're also, I think, mindful of the fact that the retail banks in Australia, the big four in particular, they're all tightening credit anyway, so the RBA may not be raising rates, but the mortgage rates are going up. And part of that is, I guess, they're just restructuring their lending behaviour because they're conscious that property prices are under some pressure. So it's not yet a full credit squeeze in Australia, but it might become so, and therefore the RBA is, I think, reluctant to take the risk that they might precipitate that. With rising US rates going forward, we may see a little downward pressure on the Aussie. But then, you know, the flip side of that is that we've got strong commodity exports and therefore that naturally provides support. So I think it's going to be a boring story with the RBA, probably at least until next year before they actually do anything.
It's never boring with you, Kingsley. That was Kingsley Jones, founder and chief investment officer with Jevons Global. We'll be back with more news and analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.